It's 7:43. I'm Teresa Wills. On this West Virginia morning, we'll visit the Upper Kanawha Valley, where people know the inside of economic hardship.
When you see that, you see somebody who was at one point able to feel productive. And when you take that hope away, you take away that person's future.
And we'll learn more about how officials are trying to contain the coronavirus at a nursing home in Morgantown, where 20 cases have been reported. This is West Virginia Morning. Sundale Nursing Home in Morgantown now has 20 confirmed cases of the coronavirus and is being called ground zero for the outbreak in West Virginia. Carol Lofton spoke with Dr. Lee Smith, Executive Director and County Health Officer for the Monongalia County Health Department, who has been helping coordinate the response to the outbreak.
At first, there was one positive case, then there was four, and now 16, and there's a couple more tests pending. Why the rapid increase in this population? Why are we seeing this kind of spread?
A couple of reasons for that. I think that the 1 to 4 to 16 is somewhat artificial, meaning that we can't get 100 patients tested immediately and we can't get 150 staff tested immediately. So we did this over the course of 2 days, and so the results are somewhat trickling in. So it gives you an artificial appearance that maybe this is just expanding. I would think that there's been, you know, the virus has been present because it takes a couple of days for people to become symptomatic. And so I really can't comment further until we have all the data in terms of how people are testing positive and negative to sort of make a comment about the population. But what we do know is that nursing home patients, by usually their age, are a vulnerable population. They may be more sedentary, they may have multiple medical problems, they may be immunocompromised. They're usually an assortment of various reasons that people end up residing in a nursing home. So we sort of collectively think of them as vulnerable, and we really want to guard against this becoming a widespread disease. That's why it's important to get, you know, your hands around the entire problem and understand what's going on in this type of environment.
Well, and I mean, additionally, nursing homes are congregate living. I mean, it's difficult to sort of socially isolate when you live in a group living space. So given that, what can nursing homes do to protect themselves?
Limiting the number of visitors, making sure that friends and family that do show up are not ill, that they take the proper precautions. That goes for anybody, not just friends and family, but anyone visiting a nursing home, whether it's, you know, some form of physical therapy or speech pathology, then all people coming through the door need to have, you know, a temperature, wear a mask, wear gloves, eye shields, particularly if they're going to be interacting with the patient. So we don't want to bring something in from the outside. And now we know that there are patients who are positive. We want to try and limit that spread among the other patients. So knowing the diagnosis of whether a person is positive or negative allows us to put the negative patients in one area and those that are positive in another area.
Some of the residents are being quarantined on site while a few have been transferred to the hospital. What is the criteria for being transferred to the hospital?
If a person were to require an admission to an acute care facility, meaning that they had an acute illness that could not be cared for at the level of care that's available at a nursing home, then they would be transferred to a hospital. Usually that is when a patient becomes acutely ill in terms of having fevers or respiratory distress. In this elderly population, we don't tend to see as many of the symptoms of the non-productive cough and the high fever and that. We do see that people can struggle with low oxygen settings, and that would be a reason to transfer them to a higher level of medical care. But as we do know, there are an entire spectrum where people fall in terms of how they respond to the illness. There are some people who have very few symptoms whatsoever, and that's why we have asymptomatic carriers, and particularly in the young people. But there are people in the nursing home who are not showing any signs or symptoms of the illness, yet they test positive. And so if they are able to maintain their activities of daily living and require no acute medical care, then it's perfectly reasonable to have them sequestered in a nursing home, just limiting their interaction so that they don't inadvertently spread the virus.
That was Dr. Lee Smith, Executive Director and County Health Officer for Monongalia County Health Department, speaking with health reporter Kara Lofton. To hear their full conversation, visit our website at wvpublic.org. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health and Charleston Area Medical Center. As the nation grapples with unemployment numbers related to the coronavirus pandemic, here locally in West Virginia, our economy has been struggling for years. But there are people here looking for solutions. On the latest episode of Us and Them, host Trey Kay talks with several folks working to bring jobs to our state. Trey has been spending some time these past several months exploring several communities along Route 60 in West Virginia. He spoke with people there about what they hope will help them find a new way forward.
I was recently driving through the Upper Kanawha Valley in southern West Virginia. I was traveling along Route 60, which is part of the Midland Trail. The road runs through West Virginia, and some call it the main street of small towns. It runs along the Kanawha River through thick forests. So much has happened recently. A virus has changed our world, killed people, and created economic uncertainty. As I drove along, I realized I was in a region that's been turned upside down before. It's a place where people find ways to keep going. I rode this way hundreds of times when I was a kid with my parents and grandparents. My brother and I were in the way back of the station wagon. We'd go and visit relatives in small towns along the Upper Kanawha. But this route also led to other relatives who lived farther away, and it was the way we'd go to get to my family's cabin. When I was a kid, I was focused on where we were going. And all these towns seemed like something that you had to go through just to get to our destination. And I confess I really didn't think much about all these towns in this region as they stretch along the Kanawha for miles. But as I look at them today, it dawns on me, in this corridor, civilization hugs the river. And behind these towns and communities, in both directions, there's a whole lot of wilderness. The idea of communities hugging the river seems like a perfect metaphor. For years, the river supported business and industry, coal mines, chemical plants, and natural gas. It provided stability and prosperity. But things have really changed since I was a kid. As the nation's economy has grown, people here along the Kanawha haven't shared in that prosperity. And now they need to make sense of the big unknown around them. I wasn't making this trip through the valley alone. Along for the ride were two local mayors, Ann Cavalier from the city of Smithers and Greg Ingram from Montgomery. Their cities are across the river from each other, but the two mayors have been working together to define a new future for the region.
Okay. And one of the things you need to know about our two towns is we are located on the north and south side of the Kanawha River, and our boundaries actually touch. So we geographically are very, very close together, and we like to call ourselves the two municipalities with one community.
And that's because we all go to the same churches, we kids go to the same schools.
We are.
So we are really one community. The only thing that divides us is the Great Kanawha River.
In 2.8 miles, take exit 96 on the right onto US 60 East toward Midland Trail.
Both mayors say a number of conditions have left the Upper Kanawha Valley reeling.
If you notice, economic activity stops here. There's a Walmart here. There's nothing from here on up. So as we go on up through the Kanawha Valley, we'll kind of point out and explain to you about the Appalachian Power Plant closure. The skeleton of that building still sits there. So also infrastructure is a big part of whether a small town makes it or not. You know, we had the turnpike that for political reasons back in the 70s, 80s, turned south of Paint Creek and went to Beckley. That's why the college is now in Beckley, because the interstate went there. It was supposed to come through Montgomery, but there was more political power in Beckley than there was in Montgomery. So that's another part of the effect of a downturn in any economy or tsunami effect. But that is a coal processing plant, and the reason there's piles and piles of coal is because the price of coal is down. They have nowhere to sell it. You'll also see, as we get closer to Montgomery, the Mammoth Coal Facility also has mountains and mountains of coal. The coal is actually running over the berms. What they call berms is the walls around the coal pile. They have so much coal on top of the ground that they don't have a market to sell it for. That coal, even though they're still mining some coal, there's just no market for it.
So both of us have been involved in the Leadership West Virginia program. And the year that I went through, we were in the northern part of the state, and we went 1,000 feet underground and then traveled 6 miles in coal cars, actually ended up in Pennsylvania. And we got to watch while one man with underground equipment, computerized equipment, was mining as much coal as 100 men would have mined 50 years ago. So one person replaced 50. So the mechanization in the mines cannot be underplayed as part of the downturn in jobs in coal. So you can mine more coal with fewer people, thus you have fewer jobs and less money circulating in the community. What people lost in all of this? Yes, they lost jobs. Yes, they lost money. Yes, they lost concerts and lectures and Friday night football games. But above all else, they lost hope. And when you lose hope, that devastates the person, the family, and the community. People talk about the opioid crisis. In our town, opioids aren't the big problem. It's meth. It's street drugs. All right? And you watch and you see the people, because we know everybody in town. When you see that, you see somebody who was at one point able to feed and clothe and house their family and drive a decent car and go to work every day and feel productive. And when you take that hope away, you take away that person's future.
We've been listening to an excerpt of the latest episode of our show, Us and Them, titled Up River Battle. Two mayors join forces to revive rural small towns against all odds. Tune in to West Virginia Public Broadcasting tonight at 8 p.m. or Saturday at 3 p.m. to hear the rest of the episode and how these communities are responding. This episode of Us and Them is presented with support from the Claude Worthington Benedum Foundation and the West Virginia Humanities Council. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our news director and producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.